Stop my talk. So as most of you know, that we have started on the Four Noble Truths. In January, we talked about suffering, about dukkha. And February, we talked about the origin of suffering. And the Pali word for that is samudaya, the origin of suffering, which is primarily clinging and craving. So today's focus is the cessation of suffering. And the Pali word for that is nirodha, N-I-R-O-D-H-A, nirodha. And next month, in April, which is soon, we'll do the path to the cessation of dukkha. So, the third noble truth really teaches us that there is a promise of liberation, and that there is freedom from self-imposed suffering. It assures us that suffering is not a permanent state, and by understanding that craving and attachment causes suffering, we can understand that letting go of them leads to peace. Nirodha, or the cessation of suffering, is the possibility of a mind that's unburdened by fear and resentment and dissatisfaction. So the third noble truth offers the profound assurance that suffering is not a fixed reality, that I or we can transform it. You know, I've spent many years struggling with self-doubt, always feeling like I'm not enough or I don't fit in. And it's been, well, I've been practicing for about 30 years, and I would say it's in the last 10 or 15 years that through meditation and insight, I have begun to see that this belief that I'm not enough and that I'm not deserving or I don't fit in, it's not an absolute truth. But it's a condition of my mind. It's a condition that and a pattern that I've learned through, I went to Catholic school, and the nuns would, I would come to school and they would say, oh, one nun especially, you know, oh, here she comes with that wild and woolly hair. Oh. Or it was known that in our fifth grade class, Sister Estelle, if you were absent, if you didn't do well on a test, all of the students had to move their seats up and make room for you, and you went to the black hole of Calcutta, the other side of the room. And that's what she called it. It was the black hole of Calcutta. So these were some of the conditions that I had learned when I was growing up. My father had a saying that I carried in suffering for many, many years. And it was, if you don't have anything important to say, then don't say anything. And I carried that for a long time and suffered with that for a long, long time. As a teenager and in elementary school and high school, I was a nerd. I'm still a nerd. And that, you know, isolates you, or you feel isolated. You feel different from anybody else because you're not cool and on top of things. But now as I practice and I'm not attached to these thoughts anymore, and I'm not. And now more often I've been able to develop self-compassion for myself, which was really a revelation to me, that I could have self-compassion for my own self. And so with that, I experienced greater relief and more confidence in myself. For many years, I thought that enlightenment or liberation, as I was went through my early years at Sims, I thought that, you know, that's only for months, for monks and for advanced practitioners. I'll never get to Nirvana or, you know, have enlightenment. But now I know that this noble truth is accessible to me and to everyone. And every day I feel that I can experience moments that offer glimpses of liberation. Those small moments of freedom and letting go of anger, you know, finding joy in things that are simple, and washing the dishes, or choosing kindness, you know, on the line in the supermarket. You know, I realize that these are expressions of cessation, of dukkha. I've many a time, well, not many a time, but I travel often, and I remember this one time that my flight was delayed. Many flights were delayed. So there were, you know, people there, you know, just, I mean, the waiting room was like, you know, packed with people. And I could have just gotten really upset and, you know, I would have done that in the past. I would have been so pissed off. I would have been going at the desk and get me another flight or, you know, I need a room but I just, now I'm able to just be with what is. I remember then talking to people, meeting more people, or walking around the airport and checking things out. And that is so, alleviated my frustration. And, you know, I choose to take a deep breath and just enjoy the present moment instead of reacting negatively. That's cessation of dukkha, I'm realizing. You know, I can recall rushing to a doctor's appointment last time I went, in fact. And as I got into my car, I was holding my cup of coffee and I spilled the coffee on my shirt. I was so upset. I really got upset then. And I felt frustration. I said, oh my God, I'm embarrassed. I couldn't get back because it was too late to change. And so, you know, I started reacting to the anger. And then I felt like, you know, Nina, it's just a moment. You just don't have to suffer. You don't have to suffer. So I took a deep breath and I wiped my shirt as best as, actually it wasn't my shirt, it was my coat, as best as I could, and I laughed. I laughed at myself and I laughed at the situation, and I realized how small this problem is. It really is. And soon I totally forgot it. The shift from reactivity to acceptance is the cessation of suffering. And I'm now realizing, even before I studied the Four Noble Truths, and this Noble Truth in particular, that there were times that I have practiced and been able to stop suffering in my life. More often now than before, of course. And still there are times when I totally forget, or I crave things, and especially when I get near Wendy's. But I'm better now, much better. And the thing is that I could feel when I make that change. When I go near the Wendy's and I'm going like, no, I have plenty of food at home, I'm okay. And it's like the stress of that just goes away. The craving of it just goes away and I don't think about it anymore. I would have never thought I could do this in the past. You know, even modern neuroscience and psychology affirms that attachment to those kind of thoughts can cause stress, anxiety, and unhappiness. And practicing cessation of dukkha helps to rewire our brain for greater well-being. Studies show that mindfulness reduces reactivity in the amygdala, and that's the brain's fear center. So it reduces the fear there, and it leads to greater emotional resilience. So it's something we need to practice, especially these days where fear is everywhere. Modern psychology supports the idea that attachment to negative emotions amplifies suffering. We also know that, I know that, suffering is not just individual, it's also a collective. This past week, I do workshops on human solidarity, and this past week I helped to facilitate with two others, colleagues, a workshop on human solidarity with mental health workers that work on people with people that have substance abuse and their families, and people who have been incarcerated. Excuse me. And one of the exercises that we have, that we do, is to ask them, you know, how can you tell a person is, I'm trying to remember the word, not doing well in their life? And they came up with all kinds of answers. You know, they don't dress well, they act out, they get angry, they have self-doubt, they have negative thinking, they have bad coping skills. And then we had this long list that, you know, there's about 35 people in the workshop, and they had this long list of all of these things that they could see how people are, trying to think of the word. But anyway, are not doing well in their life. And then we asked them, do you see yourself on this list? And these are all mental health counselors, and they all raised their hands. And so we covered that, and we talked about that. And so I think of that when thinking about this third noble truth. And we do talk to them about being able to look at their, what we call groundwater, and the things, in other words, the things that they've been conditioned to think about, and to alleviate some of their stress and suffering in the community and in their own lives. And we've learned from Thich Nhat Hanh and how to end suffering in society, and that it's just as important as ending suffering in ourselves. So suffering is not personal, it's collective. And understanding the third noble truth can inspire action. It can inspire action and social justice activism. Just like here at SIMS, we have a climate change group that's doing good work. But, you know, again, my experiences with doing social justice work, I was a social justice worker for 30 years here in New York and here. And when I was in New York, it was like we did work on, a lot of work on police brutality and on environmental injustice. But I was finding that a lot of my colleagues were more enamored with the struggle than with the vision, than with creating, getting out of this suffering. That was one of the reasons why I moved to Seattle. You know, And even though I find that here too, but not to such an extent, I guess. So as social activists, you know, we start out being angry. We could be angry at all the time. Especially at this time, we could be angry at so much stuff that's happening. But we could practice more loving kindness to ourselves and our neighbors, and even having some compassion for what we might consider the enemy. It'll relieve us from a lot of suffering, which we need every day, especially listening to the news. So, excuse me, I have to keep going on. So letting go of craving and attachment doesn't mean we lose everything, but it means gaining inner peace. And true happiness comes from contentment. You know, the Buddha said, no, first let me say is, and you know, I've lately been meditating and listening to the Dharma teacher Vinny Ferrero out of San Francisco. I think he's very cool. And he often begins his grounding meditation in the beginning by asking people, how are you doing in there? What's happening there? You know? And I think that we need to do that more often to ourselves. You know, how are we doing inside, in here? What's happening in here? The Buddha said that decision making is fourfold. By way of knowledge, by way of craving, by way of views, and by way of thought. And he said one should know how to decide on happiness. And one should be devoted to inner happiness. So cessation of suffering means extinction or quenching. It doesn't mean the suppression of emotions or the elimination of all feelings, and instead it's the ending of attachment and the reactive cycle of craving and aversion. When craving ceases, peace arises. You know, if you can imagine holding a backpack all day, the moment you put it down, you feel immediately relief. Nirodha, the cessation of dukkha, is like putting down the burdens of attachment and craving. And as I said before, this experience is universal, but the way it manifests itself can differ from culture, identity, and our own personal histories. You know, but it applies to all beings, and regardless of our backgrounds, no one is excluded from dukkha, nor from the possibility of awakening from dukkha. And so, you know, like me, I'm often struggling with work-life balance. But then I find freedom from releasing from the pressures of perfectionism. You know, doing my talk today, I was really, really anxious because I got sick yesterday. And we're like, oh my God, I'm going to be coughing. I'm going to, you know, be terrible. And it was like, okay, this is the way I am today. And I hope the Sangha will be fine. And Sangha is an important part of our cessation of dukkha. because of the support and stories that I get from the Sangha. So helped me in many, many ways. And I recognize and I remember that suffering manifests itself across identities and lived experiences. So, some of us experience glimpses of cessation in deep meditation or moments of profound insight, and then others cultivate it gradually through ethical living, practicing the paramis, mindfulness, and replacing harmful habits. And I think probably most of us do both. I spent years from what I thought was loneliness, craving a lifelong relationship, clinging to the belief that if only I had a partner, I'd be happy. It took a lot of sitting on the cushion. And eventually I realized that in this moment, I'm fine. I let go of what I learned from my parents and the church. A woman has to be married to be fulfilled. I realize with gratitude that I've had lived many wonderful lives, have a family, a close, loving relationship and support, and part of a caring Sangha. I can sing well. I've learned and experienced the Dharma. So going through the cessation of suffering is both a teaching and a learning experience. And it reminds me that suffering is not permanent. And freedom is possible. When I let go of craving and open up to the present moment with wisdom and especially compassion for those who are suffering and for myself. I tried different techniques. I use breath awareness. I use walking meditation. I use metta. I have a gratitude practice, a gratitude meditation. And so I try to replace harmful habits with skillful ones, mindful eating and speaking. I really sometimes have to stop and think about what am I going to say. I now know that I can overcome anxiety through mindfulness, that I can apply non-attachment to reduce stress in my life, and that I can replace anger with compassion. So as I said before, the Sangha can help us sustain the path of liberation. It offers, inclusive spaces. Sims has just been a wonderful space for meditation and a personal peace contributing to collective liberation and compassionate activism. I want to end here with a mantra that I've learned from my guiding teacher, one of my guiding teachers, Tweri Salah, who, excuse me for a moment before I sing. When I heard this mantra the first time, I was at a month-long retreat with her. So I'm asking, it's a metta mantra. So I'd like you to relax and listen. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. I care about my suffering. I care for me. May I be free from all my pain. May I be peaceful. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. I care about your suffering. I care for you. May you be free from all your pain. May you be peaceful. May they be filled with loving kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. I care about their suffering. I care for them. May they be free from all their pain. May they be peaceful. May we be filled with loving kindness. May we be well. May we be peaceful and at ease. May we be happy. We care about our suffering. We care for us. May we be free from all our pain. May we be peaceful. Liberation doesn't mean we never experience dukkha. It means we meet dukkha with wisdom, equanimity, and a heart open to transformation. And each of us can experience most moments of cessation, starting with small shifts in how we respond to life's challenges. This is the reason for our practice. Thank you for listening. I think that we'll leave it open today and not have rooms. I'd like to have any comments. Do you have any comments? And also, maybe you want to ponder these questions. Where do you notice suffering in your life? And how can you begin to let it go? Or what daily habits can you cultivate to reduce attachment and increase contentment? Judith.
Thank you, Nina, for the talk. A lovely singing voice, even with a cold. That was very nice. I identified with a lot that you said. And one thing that struck me about the poem, about the bee, something that I learned, I remember realizing with my sister, as an adult, that everything is not always about me, right? And that's a good thing. And the connection of thinking it's all about me to dukkha, right? And being free of that delusion that it's all about me, it's a factor in the letting go of dukkha, right? Yeah. So thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, I think that, you know, a lot of our teaching, I guess, that we hear about dukkha, it's mostly about ourselves, because it starts with ourselves, but it, you know, that's why I try to talk about, you know, that it's universal. We all have to.
I wanted to especially thank you for your statement that in a moment you said to yourself, I don't have to suffer. And, you know, when you spilled your coffee all over you and stuff, and then laughed at it. And just that tool, just that statement, if I could say that to myself more often, just stop and go, I don't have to suffer. This just happened. And I just so appreciated that. And the other thing is when you said you weren't cool, and I was wondering if anybody here was cool. I think there's something about people who are attracted to the practice. We've all been uncool maybe our whole lives. At least I identified it. Liz is with me there, and Judith and others. Anyway, thank you so much. But I really loved this. I don't have to suffer in this moment. What a concept, huh? It's so great. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. I'd love to hear how any of you are doing with the dukkha in your lives. Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thank you, Nina. I really appreciated when you asked the group of mental health therapists if they could relate to what was on the list. I just thought that was such a beautiful way to recognize that. I mean, sometimes I get so caught up in my own little swirl. And for some reason that sense of we all share suffering with people we serve, people we know. And it just, I thought that was just a beautiful example of asking people that question to create empathy maybe, and also see the sameness in us. And so I really appreciated that. I don't know that I articulated how that impacted me very well, but I just want to thank you for sharing that. That's really, really helpful.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, we do that exercise, and it's just beautiful to see them, that they're recognizing that in themselves, and that, you know, a lot of us think that, you know, they're mental health professionals, so, you know, they probably got it all together. And, you know, we all have so many different things in our lives that we have to deal with, you know, at the same time caring for.
Well, and I think in today's world, when there's so much division, you know, maybe there's really not that much division. It's just so easy for us to other, you know, we do a lot of othering in our world. And I think it would help us all if we stopped and said, you know, I share something with that person that I'm othering right now. I don't know that. I think you probably planted a seed for me to really contemplate a lot about, but thank you for that.
I'm glad. You're welcome. Hi, Candice.
Hi, Nina. Thank you so much for that talk this morning and to Ari's beautiful mantra. That was so helpful. I was going to share, well, first of all, I loved so much of what you shared about your school, because it sounded like the Catholic grade school that I went to. and the black hole of Kolkata. Oh my gosh, I remember that. And I thought it was in Ohio, but it was there too. So that was really interesting to hear that and start remembering that. But something that has been really helping me this past week, there's a lot going on in my life, and I've been feeling a little overwhelmed at times. And then something Rodney used to say to me a lot just came to me. You are exactly where the universe needs you to be right now. And I think it's Suze who once added something to that about, so what does the universe need for me today? And I've been just saying, okay, I'm here. I'm ready for what I'm uniquely here for today. And it's calmed me down amazingly. I don't know why, because it sounds like almost, you know, giving myself an extra role, an extra duty, but it's just, I'm exactly where I need to be, and this is a perfect moment, and here I am. I just wanted to share that. That was kind of strange, but helpful.
No, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm so glad we have the black hole of Calcutta in common. It's like, I can't believe that. Thank you. Thank you, Candace. Tracy. Hi, Tracy.
Excuse me. Hi. In the meditation, I was experiencing this sort of tug of war with my body being kind of loud, and my ego was pointing out that it had been dragging my body around all this time. And now it was feeling like my body was really getting heavier and like a bag of bricks. And I was just watching this, happening in the meditation. And then when I read the comments of, people saying, I think somebody said something like planning mine today, this helps. And one other person said something about, argumentative mind, this helps. And for a second, I thought they meant that the argumentative mind was helping. And so I just, want to say, like, and I heard somebody also, quote, not in, this group, but, that their suffering was, they never wasted their suffering, because it's an opportunity. So weirdly, I just, I really appreciate what you have been teaching us today, especially that it's in the shifting. It's in the shifting. That's where this sort of noble truth is. It's like, for me, it's that that just struck me so hard today. And so noticing, but then also realizing the opportunity. And then I guess the next would be the action of, okay, now I have the option, I can choose compassion. So, yeah. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so glad. I'm so glad. Yeah. I know it's like, you know, when you're doing the shifting, it's like being aware of that shift and feeling that. That's when you feel that cessation and the joy, I guess, and the happiness or the ease. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you. Lauren. Hi, Lauren.
Good morning. I've been something that really makes me suffer is my my mind, which makes stories about me, kind of like that who was saying, thinking it's all about me. So I'm the center of the world and you're different and you're the other person and dividing the world that way. And so I've really been trying to open to not to. And in meditation and also self-compassion, because I'm very judgmental about myself and then I'm judgmental about others. So this morning in the meditation, I've been practicing with mindfulness of breathing. And one of those is calming the mind. And I was feeling, and I was having trouble calming the mind. You know, I kept going off into thinking and then coming back and going off and coming back. And then I realized that the calming was really self-love. It was compassion towards myself. It was an act of compassion. When I felt it that way, calming the mind, and I was just watching my breath calming the mind, I felt, oh, you know, that's loving myself. That's self-compassion. And it just helped it continue. And when I lost it again and I went back, it felt fuller. You know, they say there's the two wings of the Dharma are compassion and wisdom. And it felt like that unified those. And it felt stronger. So to me, it felt really wholesome. And each moment of that, that to me is a cessation. So it gave more meaning and weight to my meditation, I guess I would say. And you often emphasize self-compassion in your talks. And I'm learning from that, so I want to thank you.
Oh, thank you, Lauren. Thank you so much. I'm so glad. Hi, Anna.
Good morning. Yeah, thank you so much for that. And I love that metta singing. And I don't know if you're willing to share the words of that, but I would love to that. That's okay. Yeah, there was a line that you said that really stood out to me of like, they were more enamored with the suffering than the vision. And I think that that is so common. And it's so fascinating how often just coming back to right now is the answer, where it's not like, you were also talking about practicing loving kindness with ourselves and others. And it's not that we have to like meet a bunch of conditions and then we can be kind to each other. But like, what if we just started doing that like right now? And I think about, you know, the famous quote of like, be the change you wish to see in the world, and how being is right now and not, let's plan on us being kind in a couple months to each other, but like just start. And that just feels really fascinatingly simple and basic to me. And just wishing we had more of that.
Yeah, that's the point of it all. Thank you. Hey. Sus.
I wanted to share this little 45-second interaction I had with a guy as I was walking along the canal this morning. I said, good morning. He said, good morning. And I said, it's a beautiful morning. He goes, yeah, it's a beautiful morning. And then one of us said, every morning is beautiful. And he said, yeah, because I woke up. And it was just what Anna's saying, you know, is like, just right then, we were just being these two humans who were really grateful that we were alive right today. You know, I love talking to strangers. So I wanted to just share that there's that opportunity, or, you know, that anyway, it was pretty lovely. My little 30-second, every morning is beautiful.
You know, all those little times are precious, really. You know, the more that we can be a part of that little, you know, saying hello or thank you, or even smiling at someone, you know, could change their whole day. I've learned that. Yeah. Now I'm trying to put this mantra into the... Anyone else? Hi, Liz.
Thank you. That was a really, really super wonderful talk. And it hit on so many things. It's interesting. I also can resonate with kind of vibing with the, you know, self, you know, self talk to yourself that, you know, God, you know, have I not made this better yet? Or, you know, looking without compassion towards self when things are, you know, a struggle. So looking at dukkha and going, oh man, like, how am I still acting like this? Or when coffee, you know, spills on yourself, you know, sometimes going to that anger spot and being like, man, shouldn't I know better by now? I've been practicing. But instead of looking at it as, oh geez, it's nirvana, like, I gotta get to the biggest bliss, and so I can just get through every single day without any kind of sort of moment of dukkha. Instead of looking at these bite-sized, like, moments that create the path and create that sense of peace that aren't an always. And there's always going to be those moments when maybe not the best practitioner, but more and more that practice is the default, and that moment of being able to flow with the dukkha, ups and downs of life, becomes more visible. And I really appreciated the whole thing. Thank you very much.
You're so nice. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that, you know, you get something out of it. Really. I know, you know, I'm doing more talking to myself than I used to. Like, damn, Nina. It's like, stop. But yeah, thank you.